Big Blue Insider is on News Radio 630 WLAP and the iHeartRadio app. To interact with the show, call us at 859-280-2287. That's 859-280-CATS. Or you can tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Now, here's Dick Gabriel.
Welcome to the Big Blue Insider on a Monday edition of our program. Weather's getting nice again. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. And we will talk to you tonight about all kinds of things in the world of sports, which is buzzing over a major accomplishment over the weekend. It is something that is making headlines everywhere, but it's not golf. Is it, Billy? You know what I'm talking about. Ordinarily, Billy, you think I was talking about the Masters.
Is it the Bucks signing Giovanni Bernard to a one-year contract?
No, but that's right up there, and it's not Julian Edelman retiring as well. No, it's the fact that a bowler got himself a 7-10 split on live television for just the fourth time in history. Apparently, this is a big deal, and I'm not knocking bowling in any way. But, and I, you know, honestly, somebody once told me, I think it's impossible. I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I've seen video of this before, but of course it's rare. And for it to happen on live TV, it hasn't happened in 30 years. And a kid, he's a teenager in a pro tournament named Anthony, I think it's Nauer or Newer, knocked one down, got himself a 7-10 split. He was very excited, but we can tell you, because Billy's heard the audio as well, he was not nearly as excited as the analyst, or I don't know if he was a play-by-play guy, an announcer for Fox named Rob Stone. Play it, Billy.
On TV. Come on, kid, do it.
He did it! He got the 7-10, Randy!
Oh,
he did it! Woo-hoo-hoo! My goodness, the ginger assassin just dropped the 7-10! You bet, kid! You bet! Oh, man! Give me some oxygen and water to spare the game. Brought to you by Guaranteed Rate.
There you go.
If you believe it, you can do it.
Yeah.
Guaranteed Rate. Believe you will. I believe the ginger assassin can drop the 7-10. Oh, man.
Man, I don't think Randy got to even talk, did he?
I mean.
And he had the presence of mind to get the commercial read in. How great was that?
No, he did perfect. He saw his opportunity and took it and took care of the sponsors as
oh
well.
Oh, my gosh. That was so funny. You know, when you go through headlines and you prepare for the show and you're going to talk about Kentucky football and basketball and, of course, the Masters. But, you know, this was history. And everybody out there who's ever swung a bowling ball, ever dropped one, who's ever tried to roll one, you know how challenging it can be. But the elusive 7-10, that is on television. Now, there's probably people out there who say, well, my next-door neighbor got himself a 7-10 split. Not on live TV, not on the semifinals of a national tournament. And by the way, he lost. This kid lost, you know, and he's a teenager. He's got a nice career ahead of him. But he lost by like 45 pins to the other bowler. But it's in the blood. In 1994, his dad won a PBA Tour championship. So, that's reverberating throughout the world of sports. But, of course, so is the Masters Championship. And I know you were glued to it, Billy. Were you allowed to watch? Did your better half let you glue yourself to the tube all day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not without about a 45-minute doze, of course. But, you know, there was plenty of time to do that in this tournament. A little bit of a not as exciting final round, I would say.
Well, yeah, until the triple bogey.
Yeah, until he went into the water on 15,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it took to the very end, but.
That's when we can all say, hey, I play like that. But imagine being in the running. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of meltdowns like that. Valdeveld and now I've gone blank on
Norman.
Norman, yeah. You know, and that was the end of him. You know, Norman was never the same after that. But it's such a great feat for the world of golf with the, you know, what it means to the country of Japan. And that country, that part of the world is crazy about golf. And when I was over there many years ago, we drove in Hong Kong, we drove past a golf course, and I was amazed it wasn't jammed with people, but they say it's so hard to get on. And I read an article in SI about golf in Japan, and a round that might take you and me 5 hours takes 8 hours. As much as eight
Wait,
hours.
Hold on a second.
Yes,
8
sir.
Hours?
Yes, sir.
What are they doing in between shots here, Dick?
They are savoring the moments. You know, when I wonder, I'm like, I'm sure that's the high end of the time period, but I'm sure they walk. I mean, and here's why. It's so expensive and so crowded and so hard to get on a course that when you do, unless you're filthy rich and you've got access, you're going to savor every moment. And one of the anecdotes in that story was about an American who was living over in Tokyo, and he told the story to the writer. He was at one of the driving ranges that have the multiple layers. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And then the big nets, you know, at the other end, and they're lit up at night. And he was standing next to a native Japanese man who was crushing it off the tee, absolutely smoking every drive that he hit. 275 to 325 every time. And this guy was marveling at him. And when he got an opportunity, he complimented him on his swing. And the gentleman spoke English, and he said, you know, you have a great stroke. He said, thank you. He said, what do you shoot when you actually play? What's your handicap? And the man said, I've never played. And the guy's like, what? Said, I've never played. I've never been able to get on a golf course and actually play around.
Oh, wow.
So he had to be satisfied with the driving range. So that's just how nuts that part of the world is about golf. And, you know, you see one man rise to the occasion. You see another man who let Rose had almost the same score. What was he? He ended up 6 or 7 under?
He ended at 5.
Oh, 5 under? Mm-hmm. So what was he, 7 under after 2 rounds?
7 under after one. And then I think he played par golf the next 2 days.
Yeah.
And then 2 over on the final day.
Yeah, so you just don't know. But that's what's great about the Masters. The other thing, too, is it's a window to another world. It's the one Billy and I talked about this last week. It's a window to, you know, the prettiest golf course that's out there in terms of the foliage. You know, some people like Pebble Beach, but I think everybody, for the most part, who even people that don't care about golf, identify with Augusta National. So that was truly, with all due respect to the 7-10 split, that was truly the event of the weekend.
Well, it's one thing when Brooks Koepka or Tiger Woods goes up there and rips a drive 350, or Bryson DeChambeau, who looks like the meathead that he is now. But when Will Zalatoris goes up there, 140 pounds soaking wet,
and
he's hitting it 320, it's amazing. It's incredible how he held himself up this weekend.
But see, when Tiger Woods began playing, and you were a young guy, but you knew of Tiger Woods, he was not a big guy. That people marveled at Tiger Woods. And I'm not talking about when he was a little boy and appearing on The Tonight Show with his dad, or, you know, home movies and all. No, when he was on, really as an amateur, playing out of Stanford and then joined the Pro Tour, people marveled at Tiger Woods because he was so slender, incredibly athletic, obviously, not an ounce of fat on him. But that's when people began to look into his workout regimen, and they could see why he was so strong. And he got, and just like the guy you just mentioned, he gets such great torque, or at least he used to, on his shots. I mean, the power in his swing, although people said, how long can he do that? Now, watching this guy yesterday, Billy, how long do you think he'll be able to? I mean, he's going to have to put on a little muscle, isn't he?
I mean, I'd say so, but he's already proven me wrong. There always seems to be this new guy that plays well in a major tournament, and you expect him to be the very great next thing, like a Colin Morikawa or maybe this Will Zalatoris. So hopefully he can continue it.
Yeah.
But he
but
was
usually
the
new guys, the new guys come up and it's like DeChambeau or J.C. Holmes, somebody who can just crush it, just rip it, you know, a big muscular guy. But you're right. A guy who, when he stands sideways, you got to stick his tongue out so you know he's there. It's amazing to me how far they can hit the ball.
Yeah, I don't know if it's technology, it's these regimens that you bring about when you talk about
all
weight
of it.
Training.
All
it,
of
it's
it.
It's all increased.
Yeah,
it's buku numbers.
Yeah,
when it compare it to even 10 years ago, Dick.
Well, and I was reading a story about a woman on the tour now, one of the new females, who was hitting it 300+. You know, because
Golly.
Her mechanics are so good, and you know, it's incredible. But it always comes, like we talked about last week, you got to make shots. And Hideki did that, didn't he?
He did. And I enjoyed his caddy bowing
oh,
to the
man.
Course with his hat off after
yeah.
the round was complete.
The moment that went viral, that was very cool. 280-228-7800-606-4263. Tweet us at Big Blue Insider 1. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Audrey Snyder will join us. She'll be a new guest to the show. Audrey covers Penn State football for The Athletic. And our buddy Alex Walker, who went to Penn State, recommended her as a guest. We want to know more about this quarterback coming in. We've all read about him, but we want to get somebody who's eyeballed his game. We want to know somebody. We want to talk to somebody who can really tell us more about a guy who is going to enter the Kentucky quarterback room and try to win the job. He had been a starter briefly at Penn State, so he'll join Joey Gatewood as a guy who has at least started one game, or I think he started two games. A guy who's been, like I always say, he's been hitting the mouth in a real college football game. So that'll make things interesting as well. And then Jeff Drummond will join us in hour number two. Jay Drum is always there during the Zoom calls talking to players and coaches when it comes to football. And we'll get him to put his personal bow on the Kentucky and the college basketball season. But there's still so much news out there about college basketball, including the door to the transfer portal, which just keeps spinning. We'll take a break. We're back in a minute here on the Big Blue Insider, 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Coming up, Audrey Snyder of The Athletic will fill us in on the new Kentucky quarterback from Penn State, Jeff Drummond, a little bit later on. News from the social media world, and this is according to his very own Instagram account. Walker Kessler has posted, he has two posts on his Instagram account, one about how much he loved Roy Williams, the other about the fact, and he just posted the Auburn logo and said, this was 20 minutes ago, I'm excited to play for a great coach at an awesome school and be close to home and my family. War Eagle, and then three Eagle emojis. So, Walker Kessler, the seven-footer, is going to be joining Bruce Pearl at Auburn. And Auburn recruited the heck out of him when he was coming out before he went to North Carolina. So, you know, a down year for Auburn, Billy, and maybe this is part of the recipe that swings Bruce Pearl's team back near or at the top of the SEC.
Yeah, and unlike Justin Powell, who I feel like a lot of Kentucky guys or fans had their eyes on, I don't think this was a guy that Kentucky really looked at. I mean, with guys yeah. like Oscar Tshiebwe in-house and Damian Collins on the way here, it seems like the house is full here.
Speaking of recruits who might have surprised people, Gavin Wimsett of Owensboro over the weekend shocked a lot of people when he picked Rutgers. And yes, Rutgers, if you look at recruiting, if you break down and read the stories about the recruiting background up there, yeah, they got a lot of good things going. But that is a major coup, in my opinion. If you can get a kid out of anywhere close to the SEC, and you know, you're talking about Western Kentucky, Owensboro says no to WKU. I don't know how serious they might have been in on him. U of L, obviously UK, and goes to Rutgers. And, you know, my own mom was from New Jersey. And I can tell you, that's a different world up there. Rutgers had its moments under Schiano, and now maybe we'll have them again. But that is quite the coup. Now, how great is it? Well, we'll find out. We'll find out when we see just how good this kid might turn out to be. you've got to know that at Rutgers he won't be surrounded by the talent that he would have been surrounded by at Kentucky or at another SEC school. You know what I mean? I mean, it's almost like the Mac Jones argument. How good is Mac Jones really? How good would he have been at non-powerhouse school? I mean, he was great surrounded by a tremendous O-line and throwing to good wideouts and handing off the ball to future NFL guys. We're going to find out, especially if the Niners take him. So we'll find out how good. Is Wimsett good enough to pick up and carry a college football program? Tim Couch did that. Peyton Manning did that. Not that Tennessee was down when he got there, but that's how good those guys were. Can Gavin Wimsett do that?
But what's the main thing that Rutgers offers that Kentucky doesn't right now? And that's playing time. I mean, I don't see Gavin Wimsett joining this Kentucky quarterback's room and immediately finding the starting job.
Yep.
Not with all these guys battling for the spot. But you go Greg Schiano, his second stint, they only win 3 games in their 9-game schedule with the Big Ten. They struggle. You know, on paper, I think it's a disappointing loss for Kentucky. This is a guy that's won a state championship from Kentucky, a top 100 overall player. But just with the guys around and the climate of college basketball and football moving forward, I think we're going to see these kids, depending on, you know, doesn't matter what state they're from, where's the playing time, that's where I'm going to go.
Oh, yeah,
and I'll
absolutely
transfer if I don't get it.
Playing time has always been, you're right, playing time has always been a major carrot that they dangle in front of kids, especially at the quarterback spot. That's the one position in all of sports, all of college sports, that stands out when it comes to playing time and thinking about transferring, things like that. When Tennessee signed Peyton Manning, they signed another 5-star quarterback who ultimately transferred to Texas A&M, had a decent career, I think had a cup of coffee in the NFL, and he's coaching now. But we all knew really at that time he wasn't Peyton Manning, but Manning had to beat him out. And when he did, the handwriting was on the locker room wall, and that kid left, and nobody blamed him. So, yeah, you're right. It's, you know, they've got playing time up at Rutgers.
Well, how
no
many
question
time
about it. But here's the other thing, Billy.
Okay.
If a kid is good enough, if he is, quote-unquote, generational, shouldn't he be good enough to come in and win that job as a true freshman?
Sure. Yeah, I think there's always going to be a guy that would come in and immediately win the job no matter the situation.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned the term generational.
I'm not endorsing that term either.
I do look at, you know, kind of the climate of college football right now. I think of Joe Burrow. I think of Justin Fields. I even think of Terry Wilson and how many times these guys had to change teams before they saw the right opportunity to find success. So, you know, kind of the point I was playing on of how this is just going to be a normal thing. And while playing time is something that's been dangled before in the past, I don't think we need to get too high and too low on recruits and prospects joining teams nowadays, because I think they'll change the next year as if they don't get what they want.
Yeah, they may well, you know. But on the other hand, if a guy has to keep shopping around for a team, won't he eventually start stepping down in class, to use a horse racing term?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
jump
he's gonna
back
have
up,
to.
Right?
He's going to have to, right?
A JUCO.
Yeah, a JUCO or, you know, a detour or a non-Power 5 school. Got to find the right fit. We'll learn more about Kentucky's newest quarterback next on 630 WLAP.
You're listening to Big Blue Insider with Dick Gabriel on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome back to the Big Blue Insider. Dick Gabriel, Billy Rutledge, and my thanks to John Clay, who spotted a mistake I made in my post on tonight's show. I guess I'm thinking too much about golf, because I called him Wayne Levis or Levi's. It's Will. I was thinking of the golfer, Wayne Levi.
That's a golfer?
Yeah, it's a guy. He's a little bit older than I am. He won a couple PGA titles. And I knew I'd seen it when John reached out to me, and I'm like, well, why in the world did I tap Wayne? And I'm like, so I've Googled it, and that's where I saw the name. So anyhow, that's my feeble brain at work. Anyhow, let's bring in someone who's much sharper than I am, somebody who writes for The Athletic And I reached out, as I mentioned earlier, to our pal Alex Walker over at WKYT. I said, who can tell me about Penn State football? And he highly recommended my next guest. Aubrey Snyder joins us on our Celebrity Hotline. Aubrey, how are you tonight?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about this young man, if you could. And first of all, and I know, as I said earlier, the transfer portal, the door to that portal has been spinning for months now. So was there a surprise, Aubrey, when he did announce he was transferring?
Yes and no. I mean, I think anytime you have an established backup quarterback, which is exactly what Will Levis was at Penn State, you kind of run that risk of, all right, you know, if not here, where? And then Penn State was in that situation with him. I mean, the way they used him last year was very interesting. It was a new offensive coordinator for Penn State last year with Kirk Ciarrocca, and they've since gotten another new offensive coordinator this year in Mike Yurcich. So it was another revolving door for Penn State. And the thing that was interesting about it was Levis's usage last year was really perplexing. Sean Clifford, Penn State starter, struggled, and that's why Levis didn't make a spot start last year, because Clifford had been struggling and turning the ball over, so they wanted to make a change.
Right.
But then when they used him, they kind of used him. I called it the battering ram package, because he didn't throw the ball very much. I mean, there was a stretch last season where Will ran the ball like 31-plus times without attempting a pass. And so it was just this very weird usage. Penn State was committed to it. But to me, that's why it wasn't surprising, because of how he was used, and we never really got to see him throw the ball much in that opportunity. But from, you know, the Penn State perspective, you have an established starter again, and Sean Clifford, who rebounded nicely toward the end of last season because Levis then got pulled in the spot start he made for turning the ball over too many times. So, you know, rather than let it be an open competition at Penn State this spring, Will thought it was best to take that grad transfer and head elsewhere.
And yet he's going someplace that has obviously a job that's open, but there are quarterbacks in the same room who are established. Is he got that kind? I guess he's got that kind of confidence then that he can come in and make a difference and maybe win the job.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a starting quarterback, you have to have that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you look at Penn State's situation, and they're still looking to add somebody via the transfer portal to add depth behind Clifford, to potentially push Sean Clifford. So, you know, I understand the situation in Kentucky, but to me, it's not, you know, it's a better shot for him there than it probably would have been here, just because you look at it and you say, okay, Penn State has been reluctant to kind of, you know, do anything to part ways with Clifford, because he's been their best option now for the last 3 years. So you look at it and it's like, it's an established guy. And, oh, hey, by the way, you were going to have to learn a new offense anyway, because Penn State just got another new OC. So, to me, I guess that's where it kind of levels out a little bit.
Yeah, you're right. And they got a new offense here, but everybody's on the same level now, is on the same page.
Exactly.
Why is this kid a good quarterback? Tell me about his skill set.
Yeah, I mean, he was a three-star kid coming out. The thing that we kept hearing about him as a recruit was that he had a really big arm. But again, last year we never really got the opportunity to see that for whatever reason. But yeah, I mean, it's the athleticism. The Penn State thought that they had something with him, and they did, particularly in short yardage situations. I mean, he was coming out, he was able to move the ball, and while it was very predictable, and you'd see him coming in on third and one, and you're thinking, all right, he's going to plow forward and move the chains, he kept doing it. So, you know, there definitely was a productive element to it. But in terms of him as a passer, I think that's where you have to see the growth and the development, because what we saw, you know, during that spot start last year and at times, it was the touch on his passes that was lacking. You know, he was throwing fastballs, too much zip on the ball when he needed to have some better touch passes. So that's going to be something for sure with Kentucky. But if I do recall from an interview I did with Will on The Athletic after he announced his transfer, he does have a connection with Kentucky that I believe the OC there had recruited him when he was back in high school. So there was some familiarity, at least.
Aubrey, I know Levis is a grad transfer, and the world of college football is, you know, it's no real surprise to see players transfer, but what's on the horizon with this one-time transfer rule? Do you think that it will ultimately be a positive for college football or a negative when it comes to being allowing these players to transfer one time without penalty?
Yeah, I mean, we have to see what happens with it, but I do think it's nice to see the players have a little bit of leverage for a change. I mean, you look at it, college coaches, as we all know, can leave whenever they want, and the kids are the ones always left kind of hanging in the balance trying to figure out what to do. So situations change. We all would be completely naive if we believe that someone commits somewhere solely for the school and no other reason when, you know, they're football prospects. So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be great because you look at it, especially with quarterbacks, you know. You're coming in, you're committing to an offensive coordinator, you're committing to a system and a head coach, and all of that can change. You know, it can change in a matter of weeks. So to me, it's like, hey, let's, you know, give the kids a little more power in this thing because, you know, they're the ones who their future's at stake, you know, and they're not getting a nickel to show for it. So absolutely, I'm totally in favor of it if it should go through.
Tell me a little bit more about what kind of kid he is. Easygoing kid? Was he popular with his teammates? I mean, I'm just curious about, because I'd be curious if we get a chance to meet him face-to-face for the next 6 months.
Yes, his career might all be on Zoom for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it seems very, very feasible. Yeah, I mean, he was a really good student at Penn State. I want to say he was either a 4.0 guy or very close to it. I believe he was a business major. Really, really sharp kid. Well-liked, and that was kind of, I think, one of the interesting things when you look back at last year. I mean, here's a guy, the starter's struggling, Will has every opportunity to kind of pout and be mad about it, hey,
right,
he's not getting a chance. But he didn't do that. You know, he waited, he eventually got that opportunity after Clifford really had struggled for four games. And when the opportunity came, teammates said he was a leader, he was a good leader, they bought into, you know, what he was doing. And then when things didn't go his way, he and Sean Clifford were both, it's a really good relationship that they have. I mean, they're still friends, but they're guys who are going back and forth on the sidelines saying, hey, you know, I saw this, did you see that? Trying to help each other out, which I think is really just a testament to his character. I mean, he's a guy who teammates, you know, really enjoyed, and he was always great with the media. I enjoyed getting to know him a little bit here, even though here, you know, hey, his last year here was all on Zoom too, but you know, I think the other thing you have to remember is, you know, with that COVID year, that transfer year, the free year, I mean, you're the guy you could have there for two more years. I mean, who knows? Just the way kind of things have been falling out eligibility-wise. But, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting competition to keep an eye on, at least from here, from afar.
We're talking with Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. She covers Penn State football. She's filling us in on quarterback transfer Will Levis. One of the things that he'll hear, and he's already here, and I'm sure he's here, is the fact that Kentucky is finally, we think, got some playmakers on the outer edge, which they seem to have been lacking, although we can't really be sure because when Lynn Bowden took over at QB, they just didn't throw the ball. But a downfield threat has not been evident. If Kentucky does develop that, you know, do you have any idea, Audrey, if this kid has the skills to utilize a consistent downfield threat, somebody who can stretch the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to have that. I mean, again, that was the big thing with him was his arm and that arm strength. And, you know, it was impressive, though, to watch him running because that was kind of the one thing. I mean, he's a big, really big kid. You look at his frame is really thick. You know, you don't think that he's going to be able to move as well as he did. But, yeah, I mean, to me, so many of these offenses, you got to have the talent around you, and that's kind of been a thing with Penn State here the last couple of years. You know, maybe you have a quarterback who's playing well, but your O-line isn't up to par. Maybe, you know, your quarterback's playing well, but your receiving core's still developing. And, you know, you got to have everything clicking at the right time. But in terms of what Kentucky does with him, to me, it's like, all right, worst-case scenario, you've still improved your room, right? Like, you've added depth to it, you've added experience to it. Best case scenario, hey, maybe you found your starting quarterback via the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Audrey, do you think college football needs to expand their playoff? It just doesn't seem like the sport has very much parity anymore. And I see a team like Coastal Carolina go 11-0, and Ohio State, based on their name, gets in at 6-0. What do you think about the playoff?
Yeah, it's very top-heavy. I mean, I think that's always been the thing that, you know, you look at it, and I don't know what the right or correct number is to try and expand the playoffs. I know, I mean, from the Penn State perspective, I've been covering this program for the last decade, and you know, you look back at 2016 and Penn State beats Ohio State head-to-head, wins, you know, the Big Ten, and instead, hey, Ohio State goes to the playoff and Penn State goes to the Rose Bowl. I mean, it's just, you know, there's always, it's seemingly every year you have multiple scenarios like this where you can say, hey, you know, why not expand it? I'd be all for if they expanded it. I mean, I think selfishly, right, you want to say more football is better or more higher-stakes football, but you look at it now with so many guys opting out of the bowl games, and I get it, this year is its own element. I kind of keep that separate. But even in normal years, you know, it's what's there less to play for in a bowl game, especially the lower-tier ones, where if you expand the playoff a little more, maybe you get some more of these guys to play a little bit longer, potentially. But I just think from a viewer perspective, I do love that atmosphere. And that's what I love about the NFL. When you look at it, you say, all right, you know, late January hits, playoff football, everything's on the line. I just love that element to it. And I think, you know, obviously they're not going to expand the field like March Madness, but I think that's something, you know, when you look at that tournament, and everybody loves the high stakes of it because you know right away it's win or go home, where college football is a little bit different. You know, it's, okay, win, maybe you have a shot to get in, or, oh, hey, you're playing in this other bowl game and you're both going home either way, but maybe somebody's going to get, you know, a Citrus Bowl trophy to go with it.
I firmly believe that they will expand, and not for any reason like, well, we got to get in the Coastal Carolinas. It's because, hey, we got to figure out ways to make more money because the overhead keeps growing. So we'll see that. But the cynic in me, and I'm a little bit older, Audrey, than you are, you know, and it's just the cynic in me says it'll just create more people complaining that they should be in the playoffs. So I've kind of braced myself. I've braced myself for that. Before we let you go, you wrote a piece last summer about the Joe Paterno statue, and where is it now? For the folks listening, you need to go to The Athletic or go to Audrey's Twitter page, and it's pinned there. But did you eventually find it, can I assume?
No, I still did not find it.
Were you there when still that happened? Were you on the beat when all that went down?
Yeah, so I was actually a student. I graduated from Penn State in 2012, so that was my senior year of college. So I did cover all of that. As a student reporter, which is kind of weird because you get the, you know, you've kind of seen this whole thing through at this point. You know, you've seen it from there to building it back up with football on and off the field. So, yeah, I did cover it, though it feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, that had to be crazy. I've actually been up there to cover when Kentucky went up when I was in college 100 years ago. And when Penn State came down here, it was one of the biggest days ever for Kentucky football. So hope it happens again sometime. Audrey, thank you so much for your time, and I hope we get to meet someday. And stay safe, and I hope you have a great football season.
Absolutely. You guys, too. Take care.
Have a good one. That's Audrey Snyder, who covers Penn State for The Athletic and giving us the lowdown on Kentucky's newest quarterback. And we're back in just a minute here on 630 WLAP.
This is the home of the Wildcats, 630 WLAP.
Thanks again to Audrey Snyder for joining us. Coming up at the top of the hour, Jeff Drummond will talk more Kentucky football and college basketball. Billy mentioned this at the top of the show, and you can't blame him for being excited. Giovanni Bernard is done in Cincinnati. He's never won a playoff game there. Played in the playoffs, never won a playoff game. Now he goes to the reigning Super Bowl champion. He has signed a one-year deal with Billy's Buccaneers, and, of course, he's got to make the team. And they've got talented running backs, but does this excite you, Mr. Rutledge?
It does. It does, Dick. Despite Leonard Fournette already saying that he's going to be coming back, you know how much Tom Brady loves his backs that can catch out of the backfield.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think a guy like LeSean McCoy is going to be coming back. I'm not sure Keyshawn Vaughn, their rookie out of Vanderbilt, maybe a long-term option. But Bernard, a guy who's caught at least 30 balls in all 8 of the seasons that he's had in the NFL, I mean, that's production, and that's exactly what Tom's looking for.
He is a guy who was quite the receiver, and in fact, according to one report, they may line him up in the slot, which means you may not see Antonio Brown in Tampa. So, but you know what's amazing to me? I could have sworn that Giovanni Bernard was in his low to mid-30s. He's 29. 29 years old.
I think it was the mustache that you saw on his fantasy football player profile every week.
Well, it might be that, and it might be the fact that he was very productive for the Bengals. You know, he didn't start out this year like he was going to figure into their plans, you know, but injuries and you know, other situations forced them to go to him, and he was very productive when they did. So he is moving, and now so is Julian Edelman, but Julian Edelman's moving to the unemployment line, it looks like. And what's funny about this, Billy, was that the Patriots terminated his contract. One of the headlines said, Patriots terminate Edelman's contract following failed physical, and which is absolutely the case. And now he can put in for basically medical unemployment. He can get up to $2 million from the league when you retire, right? The New York Post reports, Edelman cut by Patriots as massive makeover continues, making it look like Belichick is this horrible human being for cutting yet another established player who contributed mightily to their Super Bowls. You know, ESPN said Edelman expected to retire, ending 12-year career with New England. No, that's not the way things work with the New York Post. We got to keep people pissed off and stirred up on the subway. But I bring up Julian Edelman because, well, some of you are Patriots fans, and but I always love the story that Jeremy Jarman told us, our pal from the UK Football Network and former Wildcat who played I think 3 years in the NFL before his career was shortened by injuries. But one of the many questions that one of the many teams who interviewed Jeremy asked was, you know, they ask you all those bizarre personality-based questions, you know, are you a cat person or a dog person or whatever. But one of the teams, and I'm sure more than one may have asked him, name a player from an opposing team in your college days who impressed you the most. Who would you say impressed you the most? And of course, Jeremy played against the best in college football for the most part, playing in the Southeastern Conference. And he played in 3 bowl games. He immediately said Julian Edelman. And it kind of surprised them. Because Julian Edelman, as some of you football wonks remember, was a quarterback at Kent State. And I didn't realize he started his career at a junior college, at College of San Mateo. He's from California and finds his way to Kent State. And he was a quarterback, undersized, comparatively speaking. That's why he became a wide receiver. There was never any thought that he'd play quarterback in the NFL. But Jeremy said this was a guy lined up across the line from him, he said, who had such great awareness. In basketball, you'd call it court awareness or basketball IQ. And in football, Jeremy said, this guy had such great awareness of everything in front of him. Obviously, the opposing defense and what was happening and what to do on offense. And he said it was just so impressive. And it stuck with him. So that when that question was asked of him in the interview with the NFL team, that's the first name that came up. And I heard some guys on a podcast, Billy, kind of, I don't know, they weren't ridiculing Edelman, but they were ridiculing the notion that Tom Brady had any kind of receivers to throw to in New England, basically saying he did it all on his own. He had Randy Moss for a year, and he had some other guys who could catch, you know. And then so one of them mentioned Julian Edelman. What is he, 5'10"? Yeah, but the guy can play the game.
Oh, he's crafty, no doubt. There is some credence to that point, I think, when you're throwing to Wes Welker for so many years as your primary target. But no, Julian Edelman's a guy that created his own career, a Super Bowl MVP to his name. And that catch against Atlanta in that 28-3 comeback was probably one of the best catches I've ever seen. Ever. So a hat tip to him. And I, you know, for a brief second there, Dick, I thought he was coming to the Bucs at one point before he announced his retirement.
Well, apparently, I guess he had been, and whatever, I don't know why. I don't know why he failed his physical, but whatever it was sent him to retirement. It's not something where he can, you know, whip himself into shape and play for somebody else. And as I said, you know, he's eligible for the injury protection benefit per the CBA. Available to all the players, and he can collect up to $2 million through his benefits. So that's good for him. Not a Pats fan, but Good for him. I always mess it up. Jadeveon Clowney supposedly will make his free agency decision at some point in the next day or two. And I've not seen anything on social media yet. Billy, have you?
Yeah. Do you want the scoop?
Yeah.
He's going to the Browns.
Okay.
Cleveland.
Okay.
The dog pound.
Well, and that's fine. He's been to a Pro Bowl two or three times.
That's not official. That's just Billy's prediction, by the way.
I know they were supposed to meet with him today, but he's not announced that he's signing yet.
No, correct. He hasn't announced anything. That's just the insider, Adam Schefter, Billy, our sports scoop for you today.
Yeah. I have never been a huge fan of his. I've never believed that he has lived up to the hype. And let's face it. Well, I will say this. What a tremendous play in his college career when he knocked that kid's helmet off and forced a fumble.
Yes.
Okay?
The Outback Bowl, Dick.
Yes. The optics of that play, it was perfect. But here's the thing. I've seen that play before. What made it incredible was circumstance. I mean, it happened, and he made the play, and it was a nice play. But they absolutely had to have the ball back, and when they got it back, that's what won the football game for them. I've seen kids get drilled like that in the backfield. I've seen kids get their helmets knocked off. But the key is they needed the football, and the kid fumbled. And South Carolina ended up winning the game. What I'm saying to you, Billy, and you may disagree, is I don't think it was that incredible of a play. It was a really good play. But I don't think it's the kind of play like the kick six or something like that that could immortalize a player. And yet a lot of people disagree with me.
Yeah, I would disagree, and I would only say that because of the context of the sport and the game that was happening. Like you said, Dick, the situation in which it happened.
Oh, I agree.
A part of my being thinks back to that play when I think of huge hits in football. And I think a lot of people associate Clowney with that one play.
Sure,
and
sure.
That's, he's made a career off
I'm of just saying they are assigning too much value to it. And to that end, he's not lived up to it, in my opinion, in the NFL. Hour number two is next, 6:30 WLAP.